Xin chào các bạn đến với Blue Venture Series khởi nghiệp thành công trên kênh Việt Success. Mình là Quốc Khánh, host của chương trình. Đây là chuỗi podcast dành cho các bạn là chủ doanh nghiệp trẻ, những nhà sáng lập và những bạn đam mê về khởi nghiệp kinh doanh. Chúng tôi cũng một lần nữa cảm ơn thương hiệu Chivas Regal 18 Blue Signature đã đồng hành cùng chúng tôi trong việc lan tỏa những bài học truyền cảm hứng, những câu chuyện của các vị khách mời. Và tập podcast ngày hôm nay sẽ là một tập rất là đặc biệt khi mà chúng tôi sẽ thực hiện bằng tiếng Anh. Bởi vì khách mời của chúng tôi ngày hôm nay thì ảnh không có nói tiếng Việt nhiều lắm. Cho nên là với các bạn đang nghe chương trình qua các kênh podcast như là Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast. Nếu mà các bạn cần phiên dịch thì hãy xem chương trình trên YouTube và bật cái chế độ phụ đề lên. Và chúng tôi xin được phép thực hiện cái cuộc trò chuyện này bằng tiếng Anh. So welcome to Blue Venture Series, Khởi nghiệp thành công on Việt Success. Today is going to be a very special episode because we're going to speak in English for the first time. My guest today, he doesn't speak Vietnamese that much. And again, a big thanks to Chivas Regal 18 Blue Signature for supporting us and help spread out the messages on entrepreneurship spirit. And this series is for startup founders, young owners, anyone who interested in starting your own business. So let's welcome my guest today. I'm so excited to have him on my show for the first time. He is the co-founder and CEO of one of the most fastest growing media content and podcast businesses in Vietnam, a platform for Gen Z and millennials audience. We do share a lot of common audience as well, so I'm sure you guys know about this brand, Vietcetera. Thank you so much, Hao. Thank you so much.
Yes, welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Mr. Hao Zheng, co-founder and CEO of Vietcetera. Thank you. First of all, I would like to make a toast.
Okay.
Yes. Congratulations to Vietcetera.
Well, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for what you guys have done. That's inspiring.
Thank you for having us on the show.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Ah, wow. I mean, Thuy Minh from your team came on the show last time.
Yes.
My audience love her, and I'm sure they're going to do the same for you because we do share a lot of same audience. We share same guests as well. And to be honest, we got a lot of inspiration from what you guys have done. So good work. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much, Quốc Khánh. I can say the same for you. I've been working on Vietcetera for 7 years now.
Yeah.
And I remember when I moved here, you were one of the first people that I was introduced to about who to look out for in content, media, this kind of stuff. So, great congratulations to you and your team for putting this together.
Thank
as well.
You. I've been following you since the beginning of Vietcetera and 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Vietcetera was just a simple blog in English.
Mm-hmm.
And now you guys was totally different. Mm-hmm. Congratulations for such a fascinating journey.
Yes, it's been
but
fun.
For those of you, for those of the audience who haven't heard, why don't you tell us more a little bit about the birth of Vietcetera? I mean, from the get-go, how did you guys start it and how what was it like back then?
Sure. So before I go into that story, I do want to share one little thing. You are right. My Vietnamese is not very good, but I can speak Vietnamese.
Yes.
Not a lot of people know that because I don't use publicly.
Okay.
And I use it with certain people at the company. Mm. And one important thing, too, is I speak with a Hue accent because both my parents are from Hue.
Yeah.
So I grew up in the U.S., came back to Vietnam 7 years ago, and I never learned Vietnamese except for at home.
Oh, okay.
So I never went to school. I call it kitchen Vietnamese because we sit in the kitchen, the dining room.
Did
as
your
a family.
Parents speak to you in Vietnamese?
They used to.
Okay.
So when I was like a young kid, I had very good Vietnamese, but I spoke with a very traditional Hue accent.
Wow.
And I still today speak with a Hue accent. I can't change it.
All right.
And the accent really comes out when I speak with my older relatives who are from Hue as well, because both my parents are from the same place. So, but I have like a Hue American accent, and maybe later during the show I can use it. The team, especially Thuy Minh, always laughs at me when I use the accent.
We should have a challenge for you to speak Hue today.
We can try.
Try one challenge.
I can write pretty well too now.
Yeah.
Like with the keyboard on the phone, it's quite easy now to like the accent marks I'm familiar with and I know how to pronounce them, mm-hmm. but typing fast, it's tricky. Okay. But the keyboard obviously makes the changes for you sure. now too. So I can write. Anyways, I just want to share that.
Yeah, yeah.
Going back to the story of Vietcetera, which is very similar to why I don't speak Vietnamese as well as I should. I was born and raised in the US and I lived a very Silicon Valley kind of upbringing in California. So my father worked in the technology industry for his whole life, my brother as well. And so I kind of grew up in that environment and community of everybody's an engineer, everybody's working at tech companies. For those of you that have never been to San Francisco or are curious about it is everyone there is technology.
Yeah.
When I started my career,
Silicon Valley.
Exactly. Kind of like everybody worked at Google, Facebook, Apple, whatever.
Yeah, so inspiring.
but coming here to Vietnam, it's very different.
Yeah.
You meet fashion designers. You meet people that are manufacturing furniture. Restaurant owners. It's like totally different.
Yeah.
And that's how Vietcetera started. When I came here 7 years ago to work for a venture capital firm, it's called 500 Startups. It's still around. The team is now called Ascend Ventures. So the team there hired me. And basically, okay, I'll have to tell you the story about how I ended up here. That'll give you context about Vietcetera. So back in 2015, I was working in San Francisco for 2 years for a tech company, and I lost my job. I got laid off.
Really?
I was one of 30-40% of people that got laid off in one day.
Why?
And I remember I was on a business trip actually for the company.
Okay.
My manager calls me, hey, you need to be on the video call right now.
Oh man.
And I was actually in Europe for a trip. So it was like really late at night. It was like 10 a.m. over there and 10 p.m. where I was. I was oh, that's not good. Because we heard rumors already, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I got laid off on the video call in 2 minutes. I mean, as a business owner now, it's not easy, right? I can't blame people. It's just how it is. And for those of you that are starting your jobs or are in one right now and you're thinking, you know, the economy in Vietnam, it's not the easiest. It's stronger than most countries around the world. So we're still very positive and optimistic. But there are layoffs happening right now. And it's important to know that don't take it the wrong way. Don't take it personally, because at the end of the day, businesses are businesses. And how they handle layoffs is one thing. But just keep in mind your peers, even your manager, hopefully they've treated you with respect if that happens. And it's always good to be nice to people too. Even if you are on the receiving end of something negative, it never helps you to be negative in return. So anyways, I lost my job and I took 2 months off to reflect. I got a couple job offers in the meantime. It was quite easy at the time, but nothing was like, wow, like super motivating. So I decided to go to Asia on holiday by myself. First time, I was 23 years old and just wanted to explore.
Yep.
No other agenda. Wasn't trying to network with
people. You never came back to Vietnam before?
One time only. One time. When I was 19, I think.
Okay. This time was just
exploring. Yeah. But that time was like, I was scared to go out. I was like, my God, like the bikes are crazy. You know, this was like before like 2010 or something.
Yeah.
Anyways, so in 2015, got laid off. And I went all around Asia, and the last place was Vietnam. Just 4 days, just in Saigon. Wow. I booked an Airbnb, $10 a night, $20 a night for a room in a house. It was
Nguyen Dinh Chu. 2016?
Yeah, it was early 2016. I stayed at a hem in Nguyen Dinh Chu. Hai Trăm Tính Mười, Nguyen Dinh Chu. I still remember the address, down a hem. And the Airbnb host was this Australian guy. His name is Andrew Fraser. He was working at a tech company. He's been here for 10, 15 years now, his family here in Vietnam. And we go out. I remember we went to Ok at Nguyen Trai. That was the first ever meal I had on that visit. It was Op Dao or something.
Yeah, Op Dao.
Yeah, that's it.
Man, that's a famous one.
I haven't been back since though. I just remember going and it was just crazy. It was like 1,000 people, everyone enjoying a Saturday night, whatever. And it was awesome. And then I remember hearing the story about what he was doing with the company he was working on. And at the end of this trip, he told me how, you know, you should think about working here. I think at your age, you can really benefit from the energy. You're Vietnamese, you're familiar with the culture and the food. You can integrate a bit faster. And I just remember thinking, I don't know about that. I have a pretty awesome opportunity back waiting for me back in San Francisco. And I remember looking online on Google about like salaries and stuff too, because at the time I was 23.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert. I'm not like I'm not going to get paid very well. Like, yeah. Let's just be honest, right? And but the salaries here compared to San Francisco, they're very different.
Mm-hmm.
Cost of living, of course, right? And I just remember, I'm not sure that's worth it. I don't know anything about the business world here. Like, no. So I left, went back. But I couldn't stop thinking about it. This was early 2016. San Francisco is not fun, too. It's a hustle. It's like, it's expensive. Even if you're making more money, it's very expensive. I remember like, wow, I'm making so much. But no, actually, you save nothing. You actually save more money in Vietnam. I look at my own salary now and like I save much more here, right? And I remember thinking like, oh, you know, Vietnam, the lifestyle is pretty fun. A lot of young people, the economy is growing. So I just started looking online for jobs and I found one. Not a job listing, but I found a company in the US, 500 Startups, the venture capital firm. Big announcement on Wall Street Journal, whatever it was, and I forget what media. And then I was quite curious. I was like, wow, venture capital in Vietnam. So I tried to contact them because I discovered online that one of the partners, his name is Binh Tran, he lived in San Francisco and the other lived in Vietnam. So I decided to try to find a way to contact him, but no contact information online. It's like all the young people listening today. It's like, oh, I really want to contact Quoc Can. You know, how do I do that? Do I just message him on Facebook? You know, you probably get a bunch of messages all day. You can't read them all. And I was in the same kind of situation. I was like, I need to contact this guy, but no phone number, no email, nowhere. But I knew where he worked. And I knew that at like the company domain, it's like at 500startups.com. So I tried every single type of email possible. So I put like bin at BT at
BTran
at, I had like all the different variations and one of them went
through. Just guessing.
Yeah, wow. One of the emails went through.
Cool.
And in the email, and this is important for young people too, and for anyone doing like sales or reaching out, like cold reaching out, never write a long email or a long message.
Interesting.
Like, especially if the person reading it is like a director or CEO or someone you're trying to sell to, right?
Yeah, so busy.
Or contact. They're busy is one thing, but everybody has a problem that they need to get solved. And if your email doesn't help you, they won't read it or they won't reply. So it's best to keep your messages short. So my message, the title was like 23-year-old Vietnamese American read article looking for advice. So in the email, it was like two sentences. I was like, hey, Ben, read about you here. I worked at these companies. I want to work with you. How do I get in touch? That was it. And he replied. He replied
what
like
did he say?
3-4-5 hours. He's like, hey, Hao, yeah, let's happy to hear from you. You got a great background. Let's meet for coffee next week. Meet me here at 3 p.m.
Okay, cool.
And I was like, okay, obviously I can't negotiate the time and place. So I just got to show up, right? Showed up. Within 20 minutes, I was quite inspired about why he did this fund in Vietnam. So I was like, hey, you know, can I work for one of your portfolio companies or even for you? He's like, Hao, you don't want to do that. You don't want to work for me or 500 Startups. And I was like, no, like, I'm very serious. Like, give me your best shot. He gave me an internship, paid Xiao Jiu per month. An internship.
Yeah,
okay. I already worked full time. So I'm going back in time or my progress. And the pay wasn't very good. And I was like, but you know, I think this might be worth it. Just 1 year. I had some savings already too. So, and then I asked him, could you pay for my flight at least? And he said, I'll pay for half.
Okay.
So I ended up coming to Vietnam 2 weeks later. I just packed up everything and left. Man. And after a couple months, I realized like, you know, this is an interesting job. Okay, I'm meeting some people, but I'm a junior here. You know, you're not like necessarily learning that much. So I decided, I actually met the three original founders of Vietcetera. One of them who still works with me, his name's Guy. And they brought me on as a writer initially.
Oh, okay.
Because I was connected through the investor community.
Yeah, so it's your first join as a writer.
Yeah, so I remember I asked An Minh Do. He's now in the US, but he was a tech in Asia editor.
Yep.
So he connected to me before I moved to Vietnam, and he was telling me about Vietcetera. Like, he's like, how I just started this blog. Here's the website, the branding. What do you think? And I was like, it had one article on there, and I read it. And I was like, okay, interesting. But my first thought was like, the name is kind of hard to pronounce, but cool. Like, I was like, okay. And then, so I moved to Vietnam, and he told me to meet Tung Le and Guy Jung, who are also his co-founders. One was a designer, one was more of a web kind of content guy.
Yeah.
And I remember we met at Luzine on, I forget, Le Loi, I think it's closed now, but we met, we talked, and within 20 minutes, it's like, okay, you're a writer, you get paid $4 million a month, and you got to write 2 articles a week.
Okay, that's how you start.
But at the time, I was like, yeah, I want to meet people. Mm. So sure, screw it. You know, I'll get paid, you know, 200,000 per article. Let's go. Mm. Like, I remember meeting people like you.
Yeah.
The first person I met was the 2 founders of Maru Chocolate. And I was so scared meeting them because I researched online. I was 23 years old at the time. I'm meeting these like 40-year-old entrepreneurs who are very successful, and they somehow agreed to meet. It was English only at the time.
Yep.
So not a lot of English content, obviously, back then. And people want to hear these stories about, like, Maru 7 years ago wasn't that big. It was getting there. People knew about it, but it wasn't like that common, to be honest. Very well respected, though. And those are the stories that people wanted to hear. Those entrepreneurs who people do know, but don't know how they got started or why they're doing it. Like, what are their problems? So we ended up doing that with like fashion designers to people making furniture to restaurants, tech companies, anything. And after a couple months, I really liked it. So I asked, hey, can I become a co-founder too?
Okay.
Because at the time, 2 of them weren't really active. They kind of like launched it, but didn't really do much after. And then it was just me and Guy. Like, we were just running around. He was like putting the web content on the web, taking photos. And I was like the visual guy. And then I was doing the writing. And after a couple months, it's like, can I, you know, be part of this? And like, yeah. So we all became equal. Only me and Guy are left now. The other two have left a long time ago. So it's just me and Guy in terms of owning and running the company as the co-founders. So yeah, that's the whole story. Sorry, that was kind of long, but hopefully interesting.
I don't think many people know about the story.
Yeah, no, I don't share it too much.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. What a journey that you have come so far. From a 33 years old writer, joins later as a co-founder, and now you are well-known host for Vietnam Innovators.
Yes.
And look at how Vietcetera has changed over the last 7 years.
Yep.
But so, what you have today with Vietcetera, comparing to what you guys planned before, back in the early days, 6 years ago, when you have the vision for this business, how much different?
Very different.
Yeah.
I didn't have super high expectations back in the day. I just wanted to meet people. I started formulating more ideas after, as I saw the momentum, saw that the communities were there and they wanted more of this type of education, insights. But one interesting we noticed, because we were in English at the time, this was before Thuy Minh joined and many others joined, it was just me and him, that all of our readers were actually Vietnamese. They were Vietnamese who,
even though you guys in English.
Yeah, we had English readers, but you know, 10% maybe, right? They're all Vietnamese, 20, 30 something, looking for this type of content.
Yeah.
But there was none of it in Vietnamese, or very, very little, but could read English. But if given the option in Vietnamese, of course they would read Vietnamese. So we're like, oh, okay. But we were kind of afraid to, because once you start getting to Vietnamese language, you're in the big dogs, right? You're like, there's tons of content creators in Vietnamese. Like, how are you going to stand out? Even if it's about careers or insight, whatever, entrepreneurship, it's going to be tough. Let's be honest. And also, me and Guy, we can't write in Vietnamese fluently. So who's going to do that, right? But we had a bit of an edge always, because we had the English and we had communities from abroad, from here in Vietnam, who are international. So we always had a bit of that edge. But we knew once we went into that too, we wanted to expand the types of content we were serving, because we knew young people were following us. And it's not always about careers and development for that, but maybe it's about wellness or relationships or about identity, about all these other lifestyle related kind of questions that people have. A lot of content in English, but not a lot in Vietnamese. Because maybe it's taboo too. Maybe it's about like health or, you know, your family relationships, those kind of things you don't like to talk about with family or even your friends, but you need something to know more about. So yeah, in summary, I never thought like someone like a Twin Min would join. I never thought we'd be doing podcasts called Gaima or Yulan, you know, I just never thought that would happen. But we're responding to what young people want, right? And it's not just about making more money or careers. That's very important, and that's one very fundamental topic. But most of the content of Et Cetera is actually about those everyday life questions about relationships, identity, health, including career, of course, buying your first home, like whatever it might be, I don't know. So we look at the data and what people, the feedback is, and we try to respond to that with good content.
Yeah. If you take a look back over, you know, the last 7 years, what was on top of your mind about the main factors that contribute to the growth of Et Cetera?
I think just consistency. That goes with anything. Not even just starting a company, just you yourself. Maybe you're trying to go to the gym or improve your reading skills in English, whatever it might be. It's just consistency, because your motivation will go up and down.
Yeah.
You can't change that. Like, some days you'll just feel really bad or you're not motivated as an entrepreneur or whatever, but you just got to keep sticking through it. And just know that hopefully the people around you will support you as well. You can support yourself. So consistency was a big thing. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you toughed it out, or, you know, just like macho through it. Nah, I mean, okay, sure. But I like to call it consistency instead.
Yeah.
Because a lot of it's understanding yourself and knowing that you'll be able to, the next day is going to come, and you know, that bad patch that you might be in, as long as you know the next day will come, like you'll kind of get through it. I don't advocate for like, oh, just push through. Like, it's just consistency. Just like take a deep breath and know the next day will come and you'll get through it.
Yeah. It's interesting when you say that, because you know, on the startup journey, first you have the direction, and then later you change and responding to what the customer need, that you said with Et Cetera. You never thought about podcasts, about what you have right now. It was just simple block about, you know, lifestyle and about Vietnam. But now you have everything.
Yes.
Business, lifestyle, culture, fashion, food and drink, everything. So my question is, how much you are willing to change your direction during the whole journey? And I mean, for startup founder, what signal that they should keep in mind when they need to change?
So the original intention of the business should always be, not always should be, but it's best to be consistent in the sense that don't change the end goal, what your outcome is, the summit. We talked about this offline. Like, let's say you're starting a restaurant. Your restaurant concept is Japanese food. Customers aren't coming. What do you do? Do you do better marketing? Do you make better food? Or do you just change the concept? Do you start selling burgers?
No.
No, because then that's a different concept, right? Your end goal is different now. So for Et Cetera, the mission has always been the same, which is to bring Vietnam to the world and the world to Vietnam. The idea that the world doesn't understand this place, and Vietnam does understand the world better than the other way around, I think, but doesn't have the access of information. It's changing very fast, but doesn't have as much of that information access as they do about things going on already in Vietnam, for instance. So it's like even like about spirits, like our friends at Chivas here, right?
Yeah.
I think things like whiskey, not a lot of people know about it. Let's be honest. Not even internationally, but here in Vietnam especially, because, you know, it's not the cheapest. It's a luxury, more luxury product. You have to really understand and appreciate it. How are you going to get info about it? If nobody in Vietnam, like really, or at the time, knew about it, right? Now it's changed, of course. But so I don't think it's about changing direction. I think it's about adapting to customer needs. Customers are our readers. That's the number one customer. Adapting to their needs so we can better serve them. It's not about serving yourself. That's like, again, going back to the restaurant example. So many restaurant owners these days open restaurants for the wrong reasons. They want to take their friends there. they want to like impress that girl, you know, whatever. You should care about your customers, not about satisfying yourself. If it's just about satisfying yourself, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Because the food and the drinks should be for the people and not for you. If you want to do it yourself, make it in your kitchen. I mean, it's nice if you can also appreciate your own place, of course. Yeah. Like, that's very important. But you have to respond to what people need, not what you want. And even I have trouble with that, too. I'll be very honest. I think, like, I've always had the more, like, entrepreneurial business kind of insights, kind of outlook. But Vietcetera has adapted to respond more to what young people need. And it's I don't want to say moved away, but how do we adapt this kind of content that we've kind of always been known for from the beginning to better serve what young people want? So, like, maybe that's involving more activities to engage those young people, like startup pitching, right?
Well, for Vietcetera, you guys were scaling fast. My question is, when did you know it's time to scale?
So I don't want to come here today to be like the guy that knows everything, because I've made a lot of mistakes. So we've raised a couple million US dollars. We still have a lot of it left. We're making profit, revenue. We have a team that's growing. But we had to make our own cost cuts. We kind of grew too fast. At one point we were close to 100 people, if not more than that. And we're now like 60, 65. So we've reduced the team count quite a bit. And that was hard to communicate internally. But now the team can realize themselves that the company is much better off. And hopefully the folks that, you know, we had to gradually let go are better off as well. Because if in an environment, okay, the company's scaled up, the headcount's growing, the revenue's growing. But you as an individual, maybe a young person, you're not benefiting from that growth because you don't have a mentor. You don't have a manager.
Yeah.
You're not learning anything anymore. You're kind of just doing things for the sake of doing it. And those are red flags that you should raise, hopefully to your manager, to be like, hey, you know, what can we do to adapt? What can we do to improve things? So if it's better, what are the signals? I mean, there's audience growth for us, obviously. More and more people are following us. They're demanding more types of content, and maybe we need more resources to provide that. Maybe it's time for us to develop technology infrastructure, like developing a mobile app to reach more people.
Yep.
And we know that through the mobile app, for instance, that whoever downloads it, they're going to use and consume our content much more than someone on Facebook.
Right.
In fact, it's 10 times more.
Oh, really?
So from your apps? If you have loyalists who love your brand and then you now have an app and they download it, they're 10 times more engaged than someone just scrolling through the Facebook feed or Instagram or anything. I'm not a journalist or a MC or whatever they call it, a VJ. So yeah, that was my experience. I think like the podcasting thing, we didn't have a fancy business plan. There was no like, oh, we're going to do this and then get to 100 episodes, start making ad revenue, start doing content revenue, do this, build a whole ecosystem. No, it just kind of came organically. That is different now though. And that's a signal for when you need to scale up and maybe raise funds or have certain requirements like better finance management, better HR management. Because now for us to just like go do a podcast or do something completely new, it's quite risky because you have to align your teams.
Yeah,
you have to do research, you have to do development. You can't just like do it because you also kind of annoy people at the company if you do that. I do that a lot.
Okay,
like I talk to someone like you or you know, this friend of mine, like, hey, let's do this together. And it sounds brilliant. Like we're like, yes, let's go, right? And then you bring it to the team, they're like, what the hell is going on? Like, they're
confused. They have so many ideas.
So you have to kind of like getting people on the same page. It's a lot harder than you think.
Yeah.
And the bigger that you get, the more scaled up you get, it comes even harder. So you have to be very deliberate once you reach that.
What was your biggest problem though when you try to, you know, scale and then have people on the same page? What was your biggest challenges?
So there's the idea of convincing people or inspiring people. So it's very much, everything's about sales, convincing your internal team or outside. If you have to convince people why they should do it, you're already in the wrong boat. you have to inspire people.
For the internal people, right?
That's outside too.
Yeah.
Like when you're doing sales, you're trying to sell some your products, maybe a SaaS product, maybe your lunch set at your restaurant, whatever.
Mm.
If it's not inspiring, it's not going to attract people. If you have to convince them with a promotion or an incentive or why they should do it, you're in trouble already.
Mm.
You should have your customers coming to you. And that's the same thing with hiring or building a team. You attract talents, but you also retain talents by inspiring them.
Mm.
They want something to look forward to. They're not there, hopefully, just to get a salary and then go home.
Mm.
Okay, yes, there are jobs like that and people like that. That's totally fine. But to build a successfully scaled up business, or one that has a vision and more sustainability, you need to constantly be innovating and thinking about inspiring people.
Mm. How did you inspire people at your team, though?
That's not easy. I don't think it's easy for me to say. But I mean, it sounds good to you, but it might not to a lot of people. So you need to reflect and take feedback and make sure you're going through the right channels to, when I mean channels, I mean like people to get the buy-in.
Mm.
And that even applies for relationships. Okay, so for a lot of young people that might be thinking about starting a business or quitting their job to start a business, whatever, or looking for a new job, it's let me make it more relatable. So it's like your friend or a relationship, you're dating somebody. If you're not on the same page about why you're doing that, why your friends, I mean, don't make it too transactional, right? But it's just like, is this friend good for me? Like, you don't want a toxic friendship. You don't want a toxic relationship. Okay. Are we on the same page about, you know, why we want to be together? Why this is working? Or maybe you're in a marriage, right? Let's say, and you're like 10 years into the marriage. I have so many stories about this. Like, you know, you're married for so long, then, you know, how do you keep the inspiration and motivation to grow and support each other?
Mm-hmm.
Same things with a business. It's all the same.
Mm.
It's about inspiring each other and growing together more than just like, you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, people ask me all these business tips. Like, I mean, I'm not married. I don't have a relationship. I've failed at many of them. So it's okay. Like, to make it more relatable, right? Uh-huh. Bring it down to the human side of things.
Yeah.
And look at your own day-to-day life about why you're friends with this person. Again, I'm not trying to be transactional, mm-hmm. right? But like, I'm friends with this person because, you know, they help me out. They listen to me. They pick up my phone call. Does your team do that, right? Does your team like stick through to the end to make sure the product or whatever you're doing is successful? Or mm-hmm. do they bail out because, you know, it's 5 o'clock while I'm done with work, you know, like, sorry, the deadline, do it tomorrow, right?
Mm.
Those are signals about, I think, a successful professional relationship.
Mm. So when the team is, you know, growing so fast, like Vicetra, you just mentioned before, you have number of people increasing and sometimes you have people is not catching up with the whole team.
Mm.
I mean, just wondering about how you deal with the people issues when your team is growing so fast. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you gotta see, you know, who do I pick to be on my team and who do I manage out? And do you have that problem at Vicetra?
All the time.
Yeah.
For growing companies, like for us, we saw our revenue, our audience growing so fast. So we get so excited. Let's keep hiring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Big mistake.
Wow.
Just take a step back and reflect before you hire people or develop a plan to hire more people. Take it slow. Just because you suddenly have a lot of resources doesn't mean you need to use it all. Just take it easy, especially during times of uncertainty, like right now economically, or maybe you as an entrepreneur don't really know what you're doing either. Take the time to research and to understand why you need to hire this role, why these people are great to bring in or to move out. Just take your time a little bit. You should still be decisive, of course. Mm-hmm. Don't like take too long, but just reflect. Just know to think about it first before just doing it. And I think that was a big mistake we did.
Mm.
Just saw the numbers keep going up, just keep going and then
keep hiring.
Yeah, that's a huge mistake we made. We're much better now. The company is much healthier in all ways, not just financial, than we were even a year ago.
So how is your experience of, like you said, growing people? Because when Vicetra is growing, you do need a team of leaders. You do need a team of managers, you know, line managers to grow themselves up and managing the team members. And how do you grow the people?
a few years ago, well, actually before I moved to Vietnam, I at the first company I worked at, they did these leadership capacity training. Like they brought in a facilitator, some woman that from Stanford and had all these credentials, looked really fancy. I'm sure they were paying lots of money for her too. And we were put into groups. So my group was like 8 people, everyone from the CTO of the company to me. I was just a junior, whatever it was, market manager, junior business development. I remember being in that group and I was like, why am I here? Like that guy needs it. I don't need it. But actually I look back and I'm like, dang, I really lost a good opportunity to engage back then, seven, 8 years ago, just to listen even. I remember like being zoned out and like, you know, like, but it was actually quite valuable. Now that I reflect the opportunity, I don't remember anything because I wasn't paying attention. So, you know, when companies invest into capacity training and all this, you should actually take it more seriously. I think as young people, we have these egos that we're invincible and we don't need to learn anything anymore. But the thing is, and this applies to older people too. Learning for the sake of learning doesn't happen too much. Let's be honest, right? We're busy. We're taking care of our families, our jobs, just let's get home, you know, have fun, whatever. But learning for the sake of learning, it's not very many people do that. People learn for an outcome. They learn to get a certification. They learn to get into college, university. They learn to get a job.
Some specific
to get a raise. Like they do this and they get that. It's very simple.
You have to give them outcome, right?
Yeah, and so when it comes to education, it should be the same. So like leadership training or like public speaking training, whatever it might be for managers or just for people, for HR leaders who are listening today, it's not just doing it and hopefully people, you know, it will feel very corporate. It feels very like, oh, I got to go. I'm so busy and I got to do 3 hours.
That's happened all the time.
It happens all the time. And I think HR leaders, they don't think about that. Because, you know, what are their KPIs as HR leaders or as CEOs who are, you know, approving these things, right? They want to look cool. They want to look like they're doing something for the people. But if you don't understand the outcome or the objective, then you're going to have trouble. It's just a lost time and money, basically. So like public speaking, let's say, it's a very valuable skill. A lot of people want to know about it. But is it appropriate for all companies? Not necessarily. And within companies too, not everyone needs to be a public speaker, okay? But some people that are maybe working in business development and sales, maybe even marketing or content, okay, sure. So just really understand who you're serving with that course to be effective for them. And let's say, and maybe you're just interested in it, learning for the sake of learning, right? That's great too. But if there's no outcome, people will drop out too. They'll get disinterested. They won't see why they're continuing with it. So it's better to let it go.
Let's talk about the money. I know you have raised a couple of millions US dollars for Vietcetera so far. And my question is, how does this fundraise affect your scaling process?
I used to work in venture, so I know a little bit more than the average startup founder. Because there's two sides to the equation, like I said earlier, right? You're taking somebody's money. So that person that's giving you the money, they have expectations. And if you don't understand their expectations, then you're already in the wrong position, right? So I think when it comes to scaling, these investors, they're not investing because they're your friend. Let's be very clear about that. They're not your friend. They want money from you back. So when they put a dollar, you're going to give them two at some point, right? And hopefully more than that. Not just two, maybe 10. So how does it affect scaling up? It puts a little pressure. So you have to get the right investors that are long-term aligned with you as well. And if they're not, because they're just trying to flip their dollar. I mean, they have other incentives, right? I want to give money back to all my investors, of course, by like 10 times, right? I'll take two, but like hopefully 10, right? Like some of our investors invested because they know this content business really well, for example. Or they want to be part of the Vietnam growth story. And they see us as one of those stories. Those are great, like soft reasons to invest, but there's the hard one, which is they expect their money back and more. And hopefully you can get investors that can give you that soft side of things too. So if it's just about flipping, like I've had so many people come to us and be like, oh, we want to put a dollar, but you know, hopefully in 6 months we get $2 back. I'm like, that's not really how it works. Like, mm-hmm. I think that sounds great. Like, who wouldn't want that, right? But that, let's just be honest about that here. Like, just know what you're getting into.
Mm.
And for us, it's about building something long-term. So we want a team and of investors that are on that same page, and don't mislead people. Because if you mislead people, it sets wrong expectations,
mm-hmm.
and then people are going to be mad at you after, yeah. right? Or they're going to ask questions, and you want to fix that right away mm-hmm. if you have those misunderstandings. Hopefully you never have one in the beginning, but I've had cases, not with Vietcetera as much, but other types of business deals. Like I've been on the buy side, right?
Okay.
I'll put something in. I'm like, wait, what happened? You know, I lost everything. Like,
mm-hmm. How do you manage the pressure from the investors in terms of using the money?
So at a smaller level, you don't have as much pressure, but it's about expectations as well. So if you know what those are going in, then you'll be better off.
Hmm.
At Vietcetera in particular, because I worked at VC fund before, I kind of know what their KPI is, what their expectation is already. So when I went to fundraise, it was a bit easier for me to accept their money or to negotiate certain conditions. I knew these things already, which I understand is unique. It's not everybody has that. So that's why, like, today, the corporate governance of Vietcetera is actually very favorable to the founders. Like, we know how we've structured it, so we don't have to do this, we don't have to do that, we don't have to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How much of the growth right now you have at Vietcetera that resulted from that money, from the fundraised?
A lot. Could we have used it better? I think so.
Mm.
But that goes with a lot of investments, right?
Mm.
But we still have a lot of it left, so we're quite nimble, I think, mm-hmm. and we can adapt to conditions in the market that are changing. Did it contribute a lot? Yes. And like, I'll give you the story of Tweetman.
Mm.
So, you know, she's very, her identity is very tied to Vietcetera now.
Yeah,
her rise in the last 2-3 years has been phenomenal. I'm really happy for her. Hopefully she's listening today. She probably won't though. So with Tweetman, the story is about 4 or 5 years ago. I forget who introduced us, but she wanted to work at Vietcetera.
Mm. She came to you first.
She came to us. And yeah. I want to say 5 years ago. And I met her on the rooftop of a restaurant, Anh Anh.
Mm-hmm.
In Jakku in Saigon.
Yeah.
And the conversation wasn't that long. It was just like, hello, hey, I'm Hao, introducing. We never met before, never heard of her before. And I remember I was at the restaurant that night also just before with a group of Googlers.
Yeah.
Google employees that were mm-hmm. visiting from Singapore. They worked for a Vietnam team. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls from the team was like, oh, that's Thuy Minh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like, really? Who's that?
Famous.
I didn't know who she was. I don't follow the pop culture of Vietnam very much, so I had no idea. I was like, okay, just another person. So we talked, and based on the discussion, I was like, hey, look, you know, we're a small company, we have like 5 people or whatever, or 10 people.
Yeah,
it was like
ago.
I could barely pay myself, so I'm sorry.
Like, no way I can pay you.
I can't even pay you like anywhere near what you would want, so I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to waste your time. So didn't talk for about 6 months 12 months. Heard from her again. She reached out, I think through Facebook or whatever, messaged me. Same answer. I told her, hey, look, you know, sorry.
Wow.
The answer is no. I was just very quick. Like, if you know me, I'm very quick. I already know the answer is no, I just say no.
Direct to the point. Yeah.
And so she's like, okay, fine. And then maybe summer of 2020, when the COVID lockdown ended, she messages me again. And I look at the chat history. I hadn't talked to her for like a year, like no chats for a year. She texts, hey, Hao, how are you? I'm like, oh, not one of those conversations.
Oh,
you know,
man.
It's like one of those like people you kind of know, but they don't, their initial, like, you know, it's just kind of like, how am I? What do you want me to say? I'm good or bad? Like, you know, like, so I, as soon as I read that, I just went straight to the point. because as soon as she messaged me, I thought that, but then I thought about it for a little bit. I was like, why is she messaging me again? Does she want another job?
Okay.
I was like, wait, this is actually really good timing because I actually have money now. So
that's how you raised money already.
We had a little bit. Yeah. Okay. We made money. We had revenue. So okay, cool. I knew in my head that I could probably like pay her something meaningful. So I was like, hey, let's meet tomorrow. Let's get a coffee tomorrow morning. Are you free? Kind of like when I worked at 500.
Yeah.
I was like 3 p.m. this place now. I got the feeling like, oh, I should move fast. Like, let's go. So I told her like 9 a.m. coffee here. Let's go. The Vietcetera office was there too. And she's like, oh, cool. Yeah, let's do it.
Hmm.
And within 30 minutes, I brought Guy along too, because Guy had never met her, I think, at that time. Guy was a bit like cautious. He's the more like cautious guy. He's a little bit more like risk averse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the more like go, go, go. So we meet and she's telling me, yeah, I was supposed to move to Indonesia for family and for work, but I decided not to. COVID, I'm stuck here. Can I work with you guys for a year and then I'll move to Indonesia? And I was like, man,
yeah. No.
Like, if you want to join us, you got to go long term.
Yep.
She was like, how? All I can give is 1 year. Then I got to go move to Bali. And I'm like, all right, fine. But you're going to have to take a lower salary. So she's like, I gave her the offer on chat.
Really?
She was like, this is the first ever job offer I got on a chat. Like, usually it's like a fancy email and like a PDF, right? And I was like, yeah, your role is this, paid this, start next week.
Oh, man.
And that's her reply was, I accept. Can I start in 2 weeks? I was like, yes. So then that was it. She joined. And
that's
this
how
was
you
before recruit podcast.
A superstar member for your team. Interesting.
Yeah, that's
very
it.
Interesting.
It's not like fancy dinner. It's not like buying them a whiskey bottle.
It's about to be 1 year.
I should
right?
be buying a whiskey bottle. Yeah, just 1 year or two.
Look at what's happening now.
Yeah. And that was before Have a Sip. That was before Vietnam Innovators, before podcasting even.
Your story with Vietcetera, even though at that time, 5 years ago, is not what you are today, but it's already inspired two men to join. Many, many times.
Yeah, yeah. It was just something different, right? Yeah. Like, I think that goes for any businesses. Mm. You have to innovate. You have to be different.
Yeah.
You don't want to be just number two in something big. Hopefully you're number one in something. It's better to be something number one in something small than number two in something big. Because if you're always the second option, that's what you are. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying, like, you know, a lot of businesses are in that position. They're making lots of money too, right? But if you're starting small, it's better to be number one in something, or at least top of mind.
Yeah.
Because you'll be top of mind. People will come to you, you'll get business, you'll get customers, you'll get employees, whatever.
Yeah, you guys was different at that time. Yeah. Here's my observation, correct me if I'm wrong, but when Twin Min joined and then you guys release podcasts, Have a Sip, Innovators, 2020, I guess. Mm. And since that time, Vietcetera grew so fast and everywhere.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah.
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 Before that, it's just like, it's okay,
steady.
But then steady.
Yeah.
But then like, boof, like a big jump. Is that because of Twin Min and you guys kept releasing podcasts?
Twin Min podcasts, events.
Hmm.
Our event team is spectacular.
Yeah.
A lot of behind the scenes work there. We were also very deliberate about what we call IP development.
Yeah.
Creating intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of just doing another article or another show for the sake of it to get more views, you build IP. You build something special so that you can expand on that IP.
Mm-hmm.
So like Vietnam Innovators has the show, but we have the event. Gaima has the article series, podcast and event series. And how do we build that IP?
Mm.
We can resell and package that IP to more products and to more types of experiences.
Yeah.
I know that sounds kind of vague. We can talk about it offline, Ken, but building on what you have and expanding on it. I call it cross-selling, upselling. You do product development, you take the same thing and you just new format. It's like podcasts. So when we first launched, we knew that because there's not a huge audience on Spotify podcasts and Apple podcasts, but there are for music, you have people downloaded it, right, which is good.
Yeah.
But the problem was, for content, people use YouTube or Facebook.
Sure.
So you have to use those channels to lead gen into your audio.
Yeah.
But they're basically the same thing, right?
Mm,
it's like this show. It's on Spotify too and Apple Podcasts. So my hypothesis when we started Innovators and Have a Sip was we had to do video.
Hmm.
full stop. But the intention was to have the video as a distribution channel so you can get people to adopt the audio as well. So you're basically creating a new format right next to video that will create more value, create another audience.
Yeah.
Without taking from the original audience. Because like I only listen to Spotify. I don't like
me too.
For a show like this, I don't use YouTube. But that's just because of my consumption preference.
Okay.
Some people, overwhelmingly, people still prefer video in Vietnam. But there's like a lot of older people, a lot of people that are maybe like their jobs or their lives just can't have them looking at a screen, right? They prefer audio. Like think about when you listen to music, right? Maybe you're reading a book at home or you're just eating and you don't want to be multitasking, right? Like, so when we started, video was the big acquisition channel for audio. And when people knew that there was audio options, you can see it growing. Every month, it still grows. Audio is now, I want to say, don't quote me on this, but like 20-30% of all like downloads/views of our program. So like Half a Sip, if it's hitting 1 million, probably about 20-30% of that is through the audio.
Interesting. Yeah. I want to go back a little bit to the money that you have raised for Vietcetera. And the thing that you mentioned, when do we need to raise fund? And connect that to the scaling process. So you raise fund to scale or you scale to raise fund?
You never need to raise funds.
Okay.
You don't need to. You want to.
Okay. How do you know
It's like as human beings, what do we need to live? We need water. We need oxygen. And nutrients. Sure. We don't need whiskey. We want. So as a business, you should think the same way. What you need is money you need customers. That's all you need. You don't need anything else. You don't need to raise money either. You don't need to scale up even either. You want to scale up. So the question should be a need and a want. So you as a founder, when you're doing a business, you need to really clearly understand what you need and then what you want. And if you don't want it, because not everyone wants to scale a business. It's not easy. Like through the media, we were obsessed with like growing, get bigger, raise money, you know, blah, blah, blah. But do you really want that for yourself?
Okay.
For other people, it's great. Or maybe secretly they're miserable. But you just have to ask, do you need this or do you want this? And if you want it, go for it.
Okay, so you want to scale and you want to raise money.
You don't even need to raise money to scale. Like that's a more like strategic thing at the company that you have to consider. Because could we have scaled without money? Sure. But it would have taken a bit longer probably. Okay. And maybe we saw that the window of opportunity was a bit shorter. So we wanted to like, let's gun it, but let's be deliberate about it.
Yep.
So that's how I thought about it. But I don't want to sit here today and tell everyone to raise money because that's not necessarily what people need. It's just if you want it and you know how to do it, then yeah, it's out there.
Well, thank you so much for sharing. That's a lot of stories. Thank you.
Too many.
Yeah.
Too many.
So what's next for Vietcetera in the next 5 to 10 years? What's new?
The goal remains the same. Bring this world together closer to Vietnam. And to most importantly too, though, serve the Gen Z and millennials, right? Because the young generations, they're the ones that are in the best position ever than any other generation in Vietnam. Because they make more income now, they're more educated, they have more access, they're globally minded, hopefully, and they're curious. But with that curiosity, to unlock it and make that outcome a reality, they need more resources, right? Like not money, but like, well, money's more, but resources to achieve that, unlock that curiosity.
Yeah.
So I think that's what's exciting.
What would be your advice for someone who just starting their business in content, right?
I think content, niche communities are valuable. You don't necessarily need to be a general interest and cover everything like a Vietcetera, right? That's not easy either. And that might not be a good thing either. what are you really known for? And I think being known for something, like number one in something small,
yep,
is better than being number two in something really big.
True. Well, thank you. Good luck with everything.
For sure. Now. Yeah. Yep. Thanks, son.
Let's play some games now.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Here come the question part for our guest speaker today. We do receive question from the comments on page Blue Venture Series or VSuccess. So I'm going to read it out loud for Hao. Chúng tôi sẽ đọc một số câu hỏi và Hảo cũng đã chọn các câu hỏi từ khán giả, nơi mà chúng tôi nhận được câu hỏi từ hai trang là Blue Venture Series và VSuccess. Đầu tiên là câu hỏi của bạn Dung Nguyễn. Em đang có một kênh podcast về chủ đề phim và đã phân phối trên Spotify, Google Podcast và Apple Podcast. Em nhận thấy một vấn đề khi là làm được khoảng một năm. I think Hao can understand that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he can listen to the Vietnamese, but he's gonna answer it in English. Em nhận thấy khi mà làm được một năm thì em có định hướng là làm thêm nhiều cái series hơn, làm nhiều nội dung hơn là chỉ là sở thích cá nhân. Tuy nhiên khi mà nhìn vào thị trường xung quanh thì có rất nhiều đối thủ cạnh tranh. Làm sao để em có thể trở nên khác biệt với các đối thủ cạnh tranh? So she has a podcast about movies and distributed on over the, you know, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Apple Podcasts. And after 1 year, she wanted to do more contents, more series, go beyond her own interest, movie interest. But take a look at the market. There's so many competitors. So how does she stand out? So what would be your advice?
My advice would be to join Vietcetera's podcast network. That's possible.
Yeah,
she can reach out to me.
Yeah.
I think, like I said though earlier, niche communities can succeed. And it's about knowing what you want and need. I don't know about this creator if she's intending to make this a business, or maybe it already is a business. But you can create a lot of value focusing on one topic. And even though movies might be small, it actually could be quite big. I don't know the actual market, but you would think, like, you know, the movie business is growing really fast. A lot of young Vietnamese people, we really love going to the cinemas. So there should be a market for that. And we were talking about this offline before too. You should only do things that you really know and that you can bring value for. If you don't know anything about it, maybe just don't talk about it. Unless, again, you're building a business and you want to build a content empire, like, you know, et cetera, then okay, and you're going to hire people to support you with that, right? But I think what she's got right now sounds like she likes what she's doing. She knows a lot about it. I don't know if she's making money, but the answer to make money, for instance, to make it into a business, is not to just expand. It's just to look at what you're doing and find the opportunities for that to monetize. So, you know, I mentioned with a joke that join Vietcetera. That's one way that creators make money, is to actually join us. And we license their show. We have a few examples of that actually. And we help monetize it with them. So that's very specific to Vietcetera. But I think in the movie business, you know, there's everyone from the cinemas to the movie makers, to anything even next to movies, like maybe books, maybe you know, anything related to that, then could work.
Yep. So that's how you stand out from the crowd. You do what you love and what you know about. The second question is kind of related. Câu hỏi tiếp theo thì cũng gần có chút liên quan, đó là câu hỏi của bạn Quyên Quyên, khi mà bạn hỏi về là em đang làm một cái kênh podcast về health, về sức khỏe, làm sao để sống một cuộc sống khỏe mạnh, tất cả những nội dung liên quan đến sức khỏe. Em đang muốn hỏi cách để mà mình làm truyền thông cho một cái nội dung rất là niche, rất là ngách như vậy. So she's just doing a podcast about health and how to have a healthy life. She's wondering how she could do communication for a niche content. You mentioned it before, niche content.
So
how did you promote it?
We know a lot about the health, more mental health. That's a big topic on Vietcetera at the moment. Physical health as well. So through our data, for example, we can see what people are searching for. And public sources can tell you too. Like, you can go to Google Analytics, I think, or Google search history. They have trends. Like, it's publicly available. You can search like a keyword like health, sức khỏe, or whatever, and see how many people are the trends for that search term are. They go up, they go down.
Right.
So like during COVID lockdowns, a lot of people were searching about money. A lot of people were searching about health, wellness. That like health and wellness has now gone down a little bit since the peak of COVID. It's still a very hot topic though. So I think to, you know, better answer your question, when it comes to the content or the monetization of the business to focus on health, I think it's great. And you have to look at the ways to communicate and reach more audiences though. So I'll give you a couple examples. For us to be on the show, you were on Vietnam Innovators, I'm here. That's great for both of us because yes, we share audiences, but not everybody. So we can now, we're swapping podcasts basically. Like we can expand our audiences. So for her, for health, can she collaborate with other health or wellness podcasts or something similar to it? So like we have our show called Gaima, which is about relationships, identity, sometimes about mental health. That could be a good one because we have very related audiences. Maybe she's got something to bring to the table. We've got something to bring. I think that'll help both of us. So podcast swapping is really good. That's a type of communication. Search as well. A lot of people search for content to consume. So that's why YouTube, for example, or TikTok is very important because Spotify, we as individuals, we don't go to Spotify to search. When was the last time I did that? Like if I want to listen to, you know, a singer, I know their name, I'm going to put it in Spotify search and then find it and then do it. It's very intentional. But when you're searching about something like content to learn more about, you don't know what you're looking for. You just know you're looking for health and then you discover things. So discovery for communication. So communication is not even the right word to use. Discovery.
Discovering.
That's a really good one. I don't know what the Vietnamese would be, but so when I want to discover things, what am I going to use? TikTok, apparently all the young people use it now. I don't know, but they use it more than Google search. So like on TikTok, it's important to be using the hashtag Sukhoi or whatever, right? to reach those people searching. So I would think about that,
Great advice, thank you, Hao. I hope that Jung and Quinn get that advice and start to make some change on the podcast business. There's a couple of questions before we wrap this up. So before we go, I always have a signature question for all the guests who come here. So what would be, no, not what would be, what is your role model? I mean, any startup business or any startup brand, startup model that inspire you to do what you do today?
That's a great question, Ken. I can't pinpoint a specific role model. I do have them. Like my uncle who's 75 years old, he's a doctor, retired doctor, lives in Hawaii. He just surfs all day now. He's my role model. But I really like to, I really respect disciplined people. There's quite a number of them in my life who are very disciplined, either in terms of focus or in terms of health, in terms of consistency. And I've kind of, I like to think that I've modeled my day-to-day life based on some of those too. Like for me, consistency is very important.
So no specific person or startup ideas or business?
There are.
Who inspire you to, about et cetera? I mean, any model that you follow?
That's a good question. I think yes and no. Like if you're talking about like content companies and things like that. There are a few in the US. I mean, there's one that I always like though called Monocle. Monocle magazine. It's out of the UK. It's a print magazine though. It's not
I think they have digital too.
A print magazine.
You guys were on that too.
We were featured on there. I always like them because they're very dedicated to storytelling and they're very high quality. I don't necessarily agree with print though, so I no comment about that. But I always appreciated their quality.
So yeah, their I like the design though.
Yes, that too.
But Vicetra, have you ever thought about going print? No?
We've done one print book just as a celebration of our anniversary. That was okay. That was good. Will we do more? Probably. But we haven't got a focus.
All right. So. Thank you so much again.
Yes.
One more cheers.
Yeah, one more cheers. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. Cool. too much for this morning.
Yeah.
Một lần nữa rất là cảm ơn các bạn khán giả đã theo dõi chương trình. Cuộc trò chuyện ngày hôm nay điểm hơi dài một chút xíu, nhưng mà hy vọng là nó đủ sâu để mọi người hiểu hơn về khách mời của chúng ta ngày hôm nay là anh Hảo Trần, co-founder và CEO của Vietcetera, một trong những nền tảng về media, về nội dung và podcast đang tăng trưởng rất nhanh dành cho đối tượng Gen Z và Millennials tại Việt Nam, và hiểu hơn về những cái giá trị mà anh Hảo trân trọng, cũng như là cái cách mà Hảo đã áp dụng những giá trị đó để mà dẫn dắt Vietcetera có được ngày hôm nay. Một lần nữa xin được cảm ơn thương hiệu Chivas Regal 18 Blue Signature đã đồng hành cùng chúng tôi trong việc lan tỏa những kiến thức về khởi nghiệp và những câu chuyện truyền cảm hứng. Hy vọng là ngày hôm nay mọi người cũng đã có được nhiều câu chuyện rất là truyền cảm hứng từ anh Hảo. Xin cảm ơn và rất mong mọi người ủng hộ kênh bằng cách là bấm subscribe vào kênh Việt Success, cũng như là theo dõi chúng tôi trên các nền tảng podcast như là Spotify hay là Apple Podcast hay Google Podcast để có thể lắng nghe cuộc trò chuyện này bất kỳ lúc nào. Xin cảm ơn và xin hẹn gặp lại ở những tập lần sau.